This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
At some point in our lives, we've all done things to fit in. But then we realize the importance of being ourselves. Introducing the distinct Audi Q5, an SUV all its own. Its LED DRLs stand out wherever they shine. And with Audi Quattro all-wheel drive and available Audi Drive Select, it delivers performance that no one can imitate. So be yourself. Visit your Audi dealer to test drive the distinct Audi Q5.
I'm David Jones. Come see the largest selection ever of Audi A3s, Q5s, and Q7s. Audi Exceptional Luxury Performance at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at geraldjonesaudi.com.
Well, John Feinstein is a columnist for the Washington Post. He is a Golf Digest, Golf World contributor, radio host, the author of 35 books, latest being the first major, the inside story of the 2016 Ryder Cup. Always a pleasure to welcome John Feinstein back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hi, John.
John, always good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm glad you're well. This U.S. Open, next week's U.S. Open at Shinnecock will be how many for you?
U.S. Opens. Oh, boy. I think it's 20. Let's see. I've been to 27 Masters, so I'm 29 U.S. Opens.
If I make you off the top of your head, most memorable U.S. Open you've covered is which one?
Wow. I was not at Pebble Beach in 1982 for Watson's chip-in. I wish I had been, so I can't claim that one. Certainly the Tiger Woods-Rocco Mediate playoff in 2008 at Torrey Pines, which I ended up writing a book about. But another Tiger Woods win, Bethpage in 2002, not so much because of the golf itself, but because it was the first Open played at a true public golf course, and I also wrote a book about that. But it was just, and being a Long Island kid, seeing the Open go to that golf course that I got to play a bunch as a kid, badly, was just very exciting and emotional for me.
Your answer to this may have evolved through the years. What makes a U.S. Open memorable? Is it the play? Is it the venue? Is it the champion that comes out of it? What makes one memorable?
I think the venue perhaps more than any other major. I mean, we all know Augusta is Augusta from year to year, and they tweak it, but it's the same golf course every year. And we all know that, you know, you got to make birdies or eagles on 13 and 15 on the back nine on Sunday if you're going to win 99% of the time, and the 12 is going to be treacherous and all of that. But the venue changes at the other majors every year. I love the links courses that the Open Championship is played on. But the venue is always the subject of discussion Monday to Wednesday at a U.S. Open. It doesn't matter if it's a new golf course like Erin Hills was last year or if it's an old golf course like Shinnecock is this year. And the question about how the USGA will set it up, and somebody will inevitably say the winning score is going to be 10 over par before they tee it up on Thursday. And it won't be. By the way, I mean, it's been 5 over par in my experience, maybe 6 once. But, you know, the USGA, of course, will be under tremendous scrutiny this time because of what happened at Shinnecock in 2004. And I always go back to something Fred Couples said years ago. It was during the 98 Open at Olympic, where, of course, they messed up the 18th green on Friday. But
right.
Basically, Olympic is a very good venue. And Fred said, you know, there's nothing wrong once a year with playing on a golf course where even par can win. And I agree with that. And the players all want to shoot 20 under. And I understand that. And they want bunkers that are perfect. And they want rough that they can spin the ball out of. But the USGA, that's not their philosophy of the game. And a couple times they've gone too far in the other direction because, the winning score last year at Erin Hills, I think Brooks Koepka, what is she, 16 under?
Something like that,
You
yeah.
really want to see that at a U.S. Open?
Yeah.
I mean, that's for, Hartford the next week.
And the fans the fans have stated for years they like kind of seeing not necessarily the players struggle, but they like seeing par matter.
No, they do like seeing the players look human. I'm not necessarily struggle, but see them having to gouge balls out of the rough because they've made a mistake, or having a difficult time recovering from a bunker because they've made a mistake. You know, when I was doing the book on Bethpage. I was riding around a couple days before the players started to arrive, the week before the Open, with Craig Currier, who was the superintendent, and with Mike Davis, who was working with Tom Meeks on setup. And at one point, Craig was saying, you know, the rough's just too high. And Mike's answer was, the rough is a hazard, Craig. If you don't want to struggle to get out of the rough, don't hit the ball there. Now, there have been times when the USGA goes over. There's a line. And Shinnecock in 2004, they went over the line. They didn't water the golf course on Saturday night. It got out of control on Sunday because they had a windy day, which was forecast, by the way. And we all saw what happened on the seventh hole, where they had the embarrassment of having to water between groups. And it was basically a debacle for everybody except Retief Goosen. And I know, and that's why it's been 14 years since they went back, by the way, because for several years, Shinnecock said, we don't want you back because of what you did to our golf course. And then when they first started negotiating with him again, Shinnecock said, okay, you can come back, but we want a percentage of your TV revenues. Well, that wasn't happening. But they finally got squared away, and the membership is okay now. 14 years have passed. And, of course, they're going to go right back to Shinnecock in another 8 years, which is good because it's a great venue.
Yeah. We're talking with John Feinstein here on the Augusta Golf Show. Talk a little bit about the guys playing in the golf tournament. Sentimental storyline will be Phil Mickelson going for the career Grand Slam. Yep. Do you give him any sort of puncher's chance?
Yeah, I do. You know, Phil's played pretty well this year. I mean, he won in Mexico, and he's contended a number of other times, and he's still capable of going low. And he finished second at Shinnecock in 2004. Now, it's a different golf course. It's longer. They've widened some of the fairways. It's very but it's still Shinnecock. And you're still probably going to have to play well under windy conditions, if not all week, at some point during the week. But yes, I do give Philip your term is good, a puncher's chance. I certainly wouldn't make him the favorite. I'm not sure anybody's the favorite, but I think given that he's played well on this golf course and that he's played well this year, and he's probably really happy that one of his children isn't graduating from high school this week, yes, I give him a chance.
Foolish question, folly. Who do you like?
I like you, John, very much.
Thank you, and I like
you're a fine fellow.
Thank you. I'm not going
to
win.
You know, it to me, that is one of the questions that, I mean, how many people picked Brooks Koepka to win
right.
last year?
Sure.
You know, give me the list. And I've always said that if you give me five cracks at picking the winner of a major tennis tournament, particularly on the men's side, I'm almost certainly going to get the winner.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give me 20 cracks at picking the winner of a golf tournament, I may not get the winner. And that's one of the beauties of golf, that we don't know who's going to show up hot, who's going to show up off their game, that we don't expect to be off their game. There's always somebody who everybody says, oh, he's got a chance to win, and he misses the cut by five. But I always bring him up because I think he's just due to win a major. I think Ricky Fowler is due to win a major. And I think he can putt fast greens. And he's contended in the Open before. He's going to turn 30 at the end of this year. That's hardly ancient. But a lot of his 20-something pals who are younger than he is have already won major championships. So I think Ricky Fowler is definitely a guy to look for. Dustin Johnson, of course, because mm-hmm. he can play U.S. Open golf courses, and he showed some spasms of good golf last week. Justin Rose has to be mentioned because he's got such a great U.S. Open record.
Yeah, I like Justin. I like Justin.
Links golf courses.
I like that.
And you know, then there's a half a dozen other guys who have played well recently, who you would mention. And I'll throw Tiger Woods into the mix, like Phil Mickelson. I think he's got a puncher's chance. The question will be, if he gets in contention, can he make putts? Because, you know, with all the media cheerleading that's gone on for Tiger's comeback this year, which has been remarkable how well he has played overall, the fact is every time he's sort of walked into anything resembling contention, something goes wrong. He hits a wayward drive. He misses two or three short putts. And what Tiger Woods did when he was Tiger Woods, all capital letters, was he made every putt when he was in contention. Now he's not doing that. And can he find that again is, to me, right now, the biggest question about him, because his health apparently is very good.
Yeah. Before I let you go, what are you working on? What's the next book?
Well, thank you for asking, as always. I just finished a book that'll be out in Thanksgiving called Cleverly Enough Quarterback, because it's about playing quarterback in the NFL. I spent the season sort of, you know, semi-embedded with five different quarterbacks of varying fame and talent, and it was really fascinating for me. And a book that I think you will enjoy, I hope you will enjoy, called The Prodigy, will come out in August. It's fiction, or faction, because there are a lot of real people involved, and it's set at the Masters. And it's about a 17-year-old kid who has a chance to win the Masters.
Good. You call it faction. How much fiction? I know you've done the other books. How much fiction have you written?
This will be my 12th kid's mystery.
Okay. All right.
But my first one with a golf setting, because I was with Knopf Random House for years, and my editor there, a woman named Nancy Sisko, who's a brilliant editor, but she didn't like golf. So we did just about every sport but golf. And then I moved on to, and then I was still with Nancy and wrote a separate series of three more books that were football, basketball, baseball. It was called The Triple Threat because it was about a kid who played three sports, which nobody does anymore. Now I'm with a different editor who likes golf and liked my idea to set a mystery at Augusta National.
All right.
And by the way, I fictionalized all the Augusta National people because I suspected they might not like appearing in the book.
John Feinstein.
You'll recognize them, but won't be there under their real name.
Great. And then John Feinstein will become a mystery because he will just have disappeared. He is...
Very possibly. I have given thought to the fact that that might happen, and if I end up with 27 Masters, that's still a pretty good run.
He is John Feinstein. I always appreciate it, John. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk again.
My pleasure, John. Thanks.
Yes, when they back up the 13th tee, John will be buried under the 13th tee. So I'll let you go because I know you got to run. What was the common denominator? What was the most fascinating thing you found about these quarterbacks?
That even though they're all rich, they're all famous, they all get the best looking girls, it's a rough life.
It's
not easy because you are under the gun every single week. And the way I begin the book is with the Ravens are playing, Flacco was one of my guys. The Ravens are playing the Steelers fourth week of the season at home, and they play terrible and they lose 26-9. And Flacco's asked after the game in his press conference, Joe, how would you assess your play today? And he says, I sucked. He said, we scored 9 points. I'm the quarterback. I'm responsible for the offense. We turned it over 3 times. I sucked. So an hour later, I get in the car to drive home, and I put on one of these post-game shows. And they go to the phones, and the first caller says, when is Joe Flacco going to start to step up and take responsibility for this offense? and to the credit of the host, he said, he sucked. He said he sucked. What more did you want him to say?
Yeah. I think, because we watch Matt Ryan all the time, I think too much. I understand you need the physical prowess to do this, but I'll take a really smart guy with better than average abilities,
right?
Over the phenom,
right?
Because I think it's
right.
become no, a and, I think it's and, become and, a smart
it's
game.
A perfect example of that. Although he's not a great quarterback, but a perfect example of that is one of my other guys, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Harvard, 7th-round draft pick, and he's not physically gifted, relatively speaking. But he's been in the league 13 years. He's thrown for 27,000 yards as a quarterback.
Yeah,
and if the scouts look at him, they would say maybe he can be a third stringer, hold a clipboard,
right?
Which is what he was thought of when he came out of college,
right? Yeah,
So I agree with you. Flacco's a smart guy. I worked with Andrew Luck. He's a really smart guy. Alex Smith, really smart guy. I had one guy who's not active, Doug Williams, because I needed an African-American voice.
Right.
And Doug has this big Southern accent. He's from Louisiana, but until people miss it, but he's as smart as anybody I've ever met in sports. And that, you know, it's not a fluke that he was the guy who hung in there and ended up being the first African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
Yep. All right. Take care of yourself, would you?
All right. You will not be up there next week?
I will not be up there next week.
All right. Well, it's good to talk to you.
You too. All right. Just take care of yourself. John. We'll talk again. See you, John.
Okay. Cheers.
Bye.